This is Dave Gahary on the corner of Wall and Fraud.
Now we know better.
3 years ago today, the National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotation System Composite Index, or the NASDAQ for short, reached an all-time peak of 5,132 and settled at 5,048. As of Friday's close, that same index sits at about 1,300, approximately 75% below its March 10th, 2000 peak. 3 years ago, it seemed that everyone and their brother, sister, niece, and nephew were opening online stock trading and retirement accounts in order to cash in on the apparently risk-free money machine, constantly described as the greatest bull market in United States history. Never mind that it was a mostly rigged index, as are the other ones, and that we were functioning in a mostly rigged financial system, but people rushed to open online trading accounts and proceeded to make lots of money and subsequently lose lots of money. Well, some people believe that the man most responsible for the democratization of the markets, Harvey Houtkin, who we have as a guest today, had created a system that allowed your average investor who knew nothing about stock trading and investing to open up an account and jump right in and make a fortune. And as we learned painfully over the past 3 years, lose a fortune. We're joined today by Mr. Harvey Houtkin, who is down in Florida on his yacht. Harvey, thanks for joining us today.
How you doing?
All right, Harv. Harv, you know, you were described by CNBC, which is short for the Consumer News and Business Channel, as one of the five people in Wall Street history who made it what it is today. And your name is synonymous with the democratization of the markets. Can you explain a little bit about what that means?
Okay, well, basically what I tried to do and what I did to a great extent was allow the public equal access to the market. Now, that was for better or for worse. What I did, I never really advised anyone what to buy or what to sell, but to make the mechanism of the market more legitimate. So when you got involved, at least when you decided to buy, you bought at the current proper price, and if you decided to sell, you would sell at the proper price. Now, the proper price being that moment in the market,
right?
Not necessarily you know, what was going to happen subsequently or what was going on beneath the surface.
So you were more concerned about having individual investors be allowed, and institutional investors be allowed, to get in at the right price.
I was interested in giving people proper access to the market, not to have to go through a broker and be insulated from what was really going on, and not to recommend in particular whether they should be buying or selling. The direction, that was a thing of their choice, whether they wanted to buy or sell, whether they wanted to buy a utility stock at a decent yield, or whether they wanted to buy an internet stock at an absurd price. That was the individual decision.
Right.
What I tried to do was make the mechanism more legitimate and more fair so that you could access the market, and I coined the term direct access, which is now commonly used to describe what really goes on in the majority of the case right now.
Right. In fact, Barron's cover story is about the best online brokers, and they do have a section there for direct access electronic traders, which you did coin the phrase, and that's this week's Barron's. You are, and in fact, you did make the markets more accessible, and you are generally referred as the father of electronic trading. And people who know anything about Wall Street are well aware of how you have contributed to, but what got you interested in, you know, getting involved in allowing investors to get the best price, to access the market in an appropriate manner?
Well, I've been in the market now. I was registered about 36 years ago. I'm a student of the market. I consider myself to be probably more knowledgeable than most as to the workings of the market as a former member of the New York Stock Exchange, as a registered person for the last, like I say, about 36 years, 35 years. And I understood the nonsense that was going on in our Wall Street community, the absolute sheer abuse that was being dealt out by the brokerage community. And let's a little background on Dave and I. Dave and I actually had a radio show just after the market peaked. I believe it went on in September of 2002.
September 11th, Arv.
Right, September 11th, 2000, a year before the infamous day.
Right.
And we were screaming our hearts out, I know I was, warning people about what they were getting sucked into. Warning people about the Intels and the Ciscos and by name. And like I say, the archives were on our website, which was Radio Free Wall Street at the time. And we were, probably the most anti-O-line Wall Street show you ever imagine.
Right.
We were so anti-establishment.
But right on.
But so correct as to be almost scary, warning what was in the process of happening and describing it down to the detail. On that show, we exposed the IPO scandal, the analysts' nonsense, the accounting scandal. We went into detail over Arthur Levitz's speeches when he left the commission because of what was actually going on at the time, which ultimately wound up with Enron, WorldCom,
right,
and the brokerage firms all being found guilty of, extortion to the point of, it's hard for me to explain it. What I used to say, and I still say, if a young teenager snatches a woman's purse and runs with it and he gets caught, he's going to get locked up, he's going to be identified, he's going to do time, he's going to go through the system. I mean, God knows, not one person at Enron has seen a day of incarceration.
Right. And
this, and these were, hundreds of billions, well, I wouldn't say hundreds of billions, but innumerable billions
that
were lost,
right,
and systematically extorted from the public's pockets, whether it was directly yourself or through your pension fund or through your mutual fund. And the nonsense that went on Wall Street was so outrageous, and yet, to the best of my knowledge, I don't think anyone's been punished.
The
outright con job that was inflicted on the public. Now, we were trying to warn people about that and tell people that, get out.
I think we probably did help quite a few.
Well, I think we helped, but then again, even the media wasn't really anxious to embrace our honesty and our exposing what was going on. For innumerable reasons, let's face it, who
absolutely
does the advertising?
That's
and,
right.
And I'm even surprised, because even the station we're talking on right now, BAI, how many meetings did we have down there offering them the show as a public, consumer
public
benefit?
Public service.
And we were basically shunned off because of just, all kinds of self-interest, and everyone was worried about their little few minutes. And
yeah, there was some turmoil going on.
There was a lot of turmoil going on.
Not anymore, though. Harv, we got somebody here from BAI who has a question for you.
Yes. Sure. The warnings that you provided in the year 2000, what warnings could you give our listeners right now about what's happening in the market?
Well, I think it's just the opposite. I'll warn you, this is my opinion, actually. But I'm seeing everyone running now to the safety of bonds that are yielding, or money market funds that are yielding a half of 1%. Or going into long-term bonds that are yielding foolishly low rates right now. And people are getting out of their stocks at now and going into bonds, which, in my view, unless interest rates go to negative amounts, where, in other words, you'd have to pay them to hold your money, I don't understand what they're doing. And yet billions of dollars are being taken and put into what they're calling safe investments, money markets or time. I went to a bank the other day. The officer was ashamed to tell me what they're paying on passbook or savings accounts and stuff like that. He said in instances it's under a half of 1%, which is fully taxable, and that's what people are running now to put their money into. And the same way they got shafted with the stock market, they're going to get shafted with their bonds and their fixed income holdings. And I think it's all being set up by Wall Street once again. They're getting people into fixed income just before our deficits are going to explode again, just before the governments are going to be borrowing at the federal, state, local levels, and we're going to see interest rates ultimately probably turn around and go higher, unless we go into a complete depression when it won't make a difference anyway.
What can you predict will be happening with Wall Street as war looms?
Well, you know, once again with this war, I don't know what the story with this war is. I don't know if the war is going to turn out to be a war or just, you know, the big boys maneuvering again. I mean, I don't really see Iraq as a military foe. We're going to war. We're not going to war. I mean, I just have a hard time accepting the media's spin on what's going on here. And I really don't, you know, I'm trying to analyze what is really going on behind the scenes. Why are we really doing this at this point? Is it because, you know, they represent that great a threat more than someone else? I mean, perhaps, but I think we're getting caught up in a frenzy here. I mean, I lived during the Cold War of the 60s, and we had Russia, you know, with their finger on the button, and we had our finger on the button, and the threat then seemed a lot more real to me than what Iraq might do or a few terrorists might or might not do. I mean, I lived in New York City. I mean, it was probably more dangerous getting on the subway to go to school, because I was a student, I went to Brooklyn Tech every day, than probably what we face from the terrorists right now. So, but yet everyone's up, you know, oh God, what are they going to do? And let's face it, I worked on Wall Street. I used to be in the World Trade Center, you know, a couple times a week. So I can appreciate what happened there. But
as far as it affects Wall Street.
As far as it affects Wall Street, it's whatever the boys want to do. Right now, the public is out of Wall Street. I don't care what they tell you. What you're seeing trading going on right now, a professional's trading with professionals, the interaction of the general public is almost non-existent.
Right. Now, Harv, and this is from Business Week, the last major bear market went from 1966 to 1982, and the one before that went from 1929 to the beginning of World War II.
Right, but even went from 66, and I was around at the point, I was involved at the market at that point, we had, you know, several times the market dropped down to about 600 on a Dow, and then went up to over 1,000, which was a pretty big move. It was almost, you know, 70-80 percentage point move. It went back and forth a few times.
Bear market rallies.
Bear markets.
Right.
There were intermediate bull markets.
But for someone who's not, you know, involved in this type of trading, what do you think? You think we're in an extended bear market?
Well, I think what you have to say to yourself is, our world as we know it in this country, is capitalism, is our structure, our financial structure, sound? Is it a sound one? Are we going to, you know, go back to normalcy at some point? If so, stocks represent, in many cases, very attractive values right now. Some of the companies that will be here even after this nonsense runs its course. Because if it's not Iraq, it'll be something else. I mean, there's always something somewhere in the world. You know, now they're talking Iraq and North Korea, but I remember, you know, other than that, it would be, you know, in Israel, or what's going on in the Middle East, or what's going on somewhere else. There's always a hot spot somewhere, and good thing, because otherwise what would talk shows talk about? What would radio talk shows be talked about if there wasn't something somewhere, and they could blow it up into keeping people interested on television and radio?
Harv, I want to talk about... Sharon, did you have another question for him?
No, we'll let him finish. I have something later.
Okay. Harv, I just wanted to talk about, you're speaking of how we're hounding Iraq, and it seems like we are for no good reason. You were hounded by Wall Street pretty much all your professional life. They even put you out of business once in the 87 crash. Why do you think that was, that they were coming after you guns a-blazing?
Well, look what's happening to the Wall Street community right now. I mean, you got stocks just represented in their stock prices, like a Schwab that's down from 50, 60, and that's probably one of the better firms, down to about $7. You got Merrill Lynch way down. Most of the brokerage firms are doing terribly. I think, basically, the game has been exposed recently to a great extent. What was going on? I mean, we still have the IPO investigations. You still have the analyst investigations and everything else. And Wall Street is very good at trying to divert attention. I mean, who did they make the big criminal? They made Martha Stewart the big criminal because she did a trade. Now, I'm not saying, you know, she traded on inside information and not, but what they made out of Martha Stewart, because everything to get the heat off of them and what they did with their analysts and what they did with their recommendations, and basically obliterating what the SEC did by doing nothing, by allowing so much of this stuff to go on. And they knew what was going on.
Right, but they came after you. They came after you hard.
I was a great source of diverting attention. I was subject to, as well as the industry I represented to a great extent, which was electronic trading direct access, to an SEC, to a PSA investigation, permanent subcommittee from the Congress, the Senate of the United States, the highest investigated body in the country, decided to do an investigation of day trading, a topic which really never caused, there were no complaints. I mean, people made and lost money, but it was done, you know, at least in a relatively legitimate game. But that's what they investigated.
Right, so this is...
Because it was a good way to get the attention off what was really going on with the shyster accountants, with the Arthur Andersons of the world,
right.
What was going on in corporate America, cooking right. the books and doing
so,
all that.
Right, so in other words, the Senate, the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, their highest investigative body, which began under McCarthy in the 50s,
right, that's how
they decided to hold hearings on... day trading, and
right,
they only
that was the
right.
topic that they could divert attention for what was really going on, which was the wholesale fleecing of the American public, and people don't even realize how much they were fleeced. They had pension funds, mutual funds, everything, which was being done by an orchestrated conspiracy on Wall Street to basically take the wealth of the public.
So, in other words, instead of them conducting investigations into the Federal Accounting Standards Board and how they did not require options to be expensed, or conducting investigations into various suspicious trading activity.
More accounting practices.
Right.
The corporations were allowed to cook the books. The phony, what went on. Ad nauseum, what was going on. WorldCom, they decided to go after a few people who were trying to democratize the market
right.
by making it fairer for everyone.
And this is the Senate. This is the U.S. Senate we're talking about. Their highest investigative body.
Well,
what they saw most fitting to investigate was day trading, an area where there were no complaints.
And what the investigation wound up with, the major conclusion of the investigation was to allow the day trader to get 4-to-1 margin instead of 2-to-1 margin.
Right.
That was the major conclusion. They made day trading even easier.
Unbelievable. So, Harv,
that was the conclusion.
You've done pretty well on Wall Street, haven't you?
Well, I've done well on Wall Street because I invest properly and I try not to be conned by the rhetoric. Yeah, I mean, Wall Street's been good to me.
Right, and you're right.
I was brought up, I just want to give a little background. I came from the projects in Brooklyn.
Right.
I mean, that's where I got married. When I got married, I moved out of the projects, and every dime I made on my own, and I'm not ashamed to face anyone
right.
With how I made my money, because I basically think I've been part of the American dream.
Right.
And which is the best thing about this country is the fact that people in this country can significantly improve their financial wherewithal if they use their brains.
And Harv, where are you sitting right now?
Right now I'm in Florida.
Well,
basically the reason I came down to Florida and get a boat, which I never even liked the boat, was because basically I got tired of fighting. And I decided, you know, if no one wants to listen to me, if the radio shows don't want to put our show on the air,
right.
I mean, how hard did we try to get a venue for people to listen to what was going on, even though we were right as rain on everything.
Right. But Harv, tell me about this boat.
It's a nice boat. I came down here. Right now the market for large boats is garbage, and I was able to buy myself a nice boat for a relatively attractive price, and now I want to enjoy the sun and the atmosphere of Florida.
Well, Harv, I want to thank you so much for taking time out to join us today, and it's always a pleasure speaking with you, and it's nice to hear that you're down there in Florida taking a break, because you certainly did a lot of fighting for the individual.
I would have loved to work with you and carry forward with our effort, but at some point you have to say, you know, you hit your head against the wall long enough and you say enough is enough.
I hear you, Harv. Harv, thanks again for joining us.
Be well, bye.
All right, take care.